I grew up in the Mormon Church. Born and raised, as they say. Even during the times of inactivity, I still considered myself to be a true believing Mormon. Times and people change, and when someone pushes you to reevaluate your beliefs, you sometimes realize how wrong you were. 2016 was the year I moved from Mormonville to Heathensburg. I'm Molly Ann Mormon. Welcome to Doubting Dogma, where I explore my new views and new friendships, moving on without religious belief. Happy Sunday, everybody, and welcome to Doubting Dogma from Heathen City, Pennsylvania. This is Molly Ann Mormon, and joining me, of course, is our lovely purple co-host, Riss McCool. Riss, welcome back.
I am six hours from Milwaukee, and I stayed that way.
And yes, someone who did not stay 6 hours from Milwaukee, joining us to explore the nuclear fallout of a disastrous thing, Thomas Smith. Thomas, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Yeah, I guess I missed that rule. Always stay 6 hours from the radius. Yeah, I didn't get that rule right, I guess. Live and learn.
Yeah, we all make mistakes. It's cool.
Yeah, I never got the memo on that one, but I've never...
You've accidentally complied. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's like the ignorance thing, you know, you just...
Well, you know,
have no reason to go up to that area until you just don't. So
I live in the Twin Cities, and it's also about 6 hours from Chicago. And because that's like the first sign of civilization after leaving the Twin Cities, it's like Wisconsin is just 278 miles of bullshit. So, yeah. You know, in between here and Chicago, it's one of those places where, say, someone like me has to go, hey, is it safe to use the bathroom here? So I try not to spend too much time in that garbage state.
Yeah.
And cheese. Don't forget the cheese.
There's cheese.
Yes.
I do have that.
I've heard.
Also, I hear there's some number of Packers fans there. It's,
yeah.
And that goes along with ridiculous. The cheese.
You fly into the airport and it's just everybody in a Packers jersey. Like it really is like a cartoon.
Well, there's nothing else going on there, so they have to really have something. Yeah.
Packers jersey and a cheese hat, they've covered the two things that are there. So.
But
all joking aside, like what's the maybe one of the most depressing things about all this is that I really enjoyed last year's conference. And I thought year's conference was a success.
Take us into that a little bit. Like, what was last year's conference like? Like, what sort of topics were there and what sort of environment did they have going?
It was very much... So the organization is called Mythicist Milwaukee, and that comes from... I believe it comes from their Jesus mythicism views, because they've been big with, you know, like Richard Carrier and David Fitzgerald and that contingent of people that don't think Jesus actually existed. I think they made some effort to make the organization more generic, and so that it's not just about that specific question, because that specific question I think it's maybe not the, you know, I think Jesus most likely did exist, so it would be weird to base an entire organization on that. But last year's, the only reason I mentioned it is last year's conference was the highlight of it, the main event was a debate between Bart Ehrman and Robert Price on that very question, which is great. I mean, that's a cool debate to have. That's something I you know, was very happy to be able to witness, and I think there's nothing wrong with that event. And I was there. Some other people were there. I thought my talk was a success, and the audience feedback was great. And I had a great time. It was fun, you know, hung out, did a thing. It was good. And then I had no reason to suspect at the time that this organization was planning on really just plumbing the depths of YouTube depravity the following year. And I think it had to do a lot with some sort of inner group dynamics going on. Some people who really had some ideas that weren't shared by everybody, and a lot of people left, but the main people in control of it, Brian, Sean, Dimitri, a couple others, really, really do, buy into these ideas. They're not just, they try to play themselves off sometimes as just facilitators. But I mean, I spent an entire evening at this party beforehand, before the whole Sargon thing, like just hanging out at the party. And I was just amazed that just every single person was coming at me with the same, you know, red pill type arguments all night. And I was like, this is not a good sign that everybody seems, I mean, they were perfectly respectful. It's not like they were, you know, they weren't harassing me or something, but they just, everybody had these same kind of MRA, red pill, what about white men arguments with me. And and this was just at the party for the people organizing. This wasn't, you know, like the Sargon fanboy party. Which was what the VIP night was. So, I mean, I think they really do believe these things. And sometimes they try to play it off like they don't, and they try to play it off like, oh, freedom of speech. But that's bullshit, you know, in my opinion.
So, but just for the sake of those who may not have been following this, because I've had several conversations with friends I have here, and they're like, what the hell are you talking about? Can you sort of elaborate on some of those ideas? Like, what is it that you're confronting, and why is YouTube atheism so much different than perhaps the inner circle of people we listen to here?
Well, that's a very deep question. I can only attempt an answer at that. Do you need me to like go through the background of what's going on or?
No. Okay. I mean, I know, I just feel like, yeah. You know, you mentioned on episode 86, I think it was that, it was a lot of inside baseball, and I feel like there should just be a little bit of a summary to sort of catch us up on the philosophies and perspectives that we're dealing with here.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do my best. I mean, and that's part of the problem and the reason that I agreed to do this thing is that I'm not an expert on YouTube. I hate it, so I just avoid it. But I didn't, when they gave me Carl, aka Sargon, as the alternative who was going to fill in after Dave Rubin dropped out, I just assumed, you know, like, okay, I've kind of heard his name before. I'm sure he's whatever. I never dreamed that he would be someone who would say really disgusting stuff and that he would be given a platform. You know, I didn't dream of that. So if I were to try to summarize this inside baseball YouTube stuff from my perspective of having learned a lot about, I haven't gotten some really firsthand knowledge. Now, again, I'm not an expert on it. There's other people who are in that world who know more about it, but I think I know a bit about it. And what it seems to me is that of the original kind of Four Horsemen New Atheism stuff, there's a facet of it, a couple elements of it that this community in a way fetishized. So winning in a debate, for example, dropping like an intellectual truth bomb kind of thing, you know, ownage, and it morphed into less being about good ideas and more being about the humiliation of your opponent. So the entire culture, as I see it there, seems to be around finding someone you think said something stupid, or by the way, taking something out of context, often just maliciously, often just intentionally. And it's not enough to just disagree. You have to paint them as so beyond stupid that you can't even believe they exist. Like that is basically every YouTube video that I watch of these guys, is finding an opponent who they've demonized through these tactics, through these very tactics of kind of taking things out of context or purposefully misinterpreting them, that kind of thing. Or fine, you know, maybe also they just, for some of the ideas, they just have a different idea and that's fine, whatever. But they use that to demonize them to an extent that you can't even, there's no rational dialogue happening whatsoever. I mean, you can't even, in the debate when I did it at Mythicist Milwaukee with Carl, I got booed for just wanting to define intersectionality. Like they wouldn't even allow the definition of a word.
Mm-hmm.
If that's not anti-intellectual, what is? I mean, you want to disagree with me on whether or not intersectionality is like a useful thing? Fine. We can have an intellectual conversation about it. You know, but like, you want to boo me for trying to even define our terms before we even can have a discussion? It's absurd. There's no exchange of ideas there, you know, like it's worthless. It's not, why would you want that to be your conference? Why would you want that to be the caliber of intellect that you're promoting at your conference, you know? So I mean, it is very much this ownage culture. And right now, as a result of several things, I mean, the debate, obviously, but also some follow-up videos, some smear campaigns that people are lying, saying things like I started my voicemail to collect dirt on Mrs. Milwaukee, which is 17 different levels of not true. Through stuff like that, and that's just one example, but through many examples of things they're just making up and distorting, I just get people all day now just on every YouTube video I've ever done, which is only a couple, and they're years old and they're unrelated to this. They're on a different channel. It's not even the same name. Getting people just saying just horrible things all the time, you know. It's useless. It's not, but it only exists for these people. Like one thing they do is they like to say that, oh well, that's just the internet, you know, that's just how it is. Of course you have shitty people saying shitty things all the time, like that's just how it is. But it's only that way for them. Mm-hmm. Like there's no, you know, there's no, you and I, our podcast listeners aren't going off and tweeting, you know, rape jokes at people all the, like, it's only one direction of that. So, right. You know, like there's a reason for that. And the reason is because when your entire medium is ownage and is like a 22 minute, whatever the book references that I always forget, 2 minutes of hate or whatever, Brave New World or something, or is it 1984? One of those. When it's just that, and that really is what it is. I mean, they put up a picture of Steve Shives and they all just rage about it, you know, for when that's your culture, when that's your content, of course trolls are going to like you. Of course you're going to foster that kind of audience. Even if you're not responsible for everything an individual troll says that's your listener, of course you're going to foster that. So, I know there's a little bit scatterbrained, but those are some of my thoughts right now on what we're seeing there. And then, one more thing to tie in the ideology. So that's all about the shitty tactics and the disgusting nature of what it is. And that would be bad regardless of what their ideology was. But their ideology, is the last part, I suppose, the last component is one of essentially what about white men? Like it's virtually boils down to that. Now, it's not as though these are all white people. I mean, they're mostly white people, but there are some people of color who also have bought into this community, it's not really for me to say what their motivations are. But for the most part, the idea is that the balance of equality has swung so far that white men are now on the bad end of the spectrum. Like they're on the receiving end of a lot of discrimination. And people of color and women, trans people, everybody like that, they're, you guys, oh, I got news for you, Riss. You're gaming the system and you're unfairly gaining an advantage over me by using this kind of moral currency that they see, the entire society has. So how does that jibe with your perception of what you're doing, Riss?
Oh, I was under the impression that it was dangerous for me to exist every day, and being a somewhat privileged trans person within my own community, just being at least a little bit less subjected to being able to be fired for who I am, being able to shop where I want to, being able to live where I want to, you know, all those things where I can just get fired for existing. I was unaware that was, you know, an advantage over white men. I'm just so confused.
Well, maybe you should have thought of that before you started identifying as a different 15-digit number every day, Riss.
Yeah, yeah. It's really on me. I can see how people would come to that conclusion.
Don't tell me you're on Todd's side now, Riss.
Who?
Todd?
Todd? I don't know.
Wait, who's Todd?
The figurative Todd. I gotcha.
Yes, the figurative Todd.
Oh, figurative Todd. So, okay, gotcha.
The cis white het male that always harasses everybody because he doesn't get it.
Yeah. And why do you think this is so popular? I mean, beyond having the freedom to say whatever you want and then somehow still be a victim of it, you know, these are the same people who bitch about identity politics, and then their entire platform is identity politics, just about them. So, I can't even begin to fathom what it's like to talk to someone who legitimately thinks that, like, just being a straight white man is a crime now. I have such a hard time. You know, those two voicemails you played at the end of your show, I'm just going, what are you talking about?
Yeah. I mean, I think you already put it really well. I think that that's major components of it. It does allow them to feel as though they're victims. And, you know, that's powerful because, and there's a certain, I don't want to say sympathy, but there's a certain understanding that I have of what it's like. I mean, because I am a white male, like I get the feeling where because of my privilege, I view everything that's happening as kind of the default, like my experience is the default, just like Christian privilege. Mm-hmm. And that's what amazes me. Like they would, I'm sure most of these people would recognize Christian privilege in this country. I mean, I'd be flabbergasted if they didn't. Although some of them won't because they're actually Trump supporting, you know, people. So there's actually a conservative and somewhat religious overlap with this, because I do believe their ultimate religion is one of hating progressives and hating feminists and hating, you know, Black Lives Matter. That ties them together more than atheism, in my opinion. But anyway, I think that they can't recognize their own privilege. So when their privilege is encroached upon, then it's viewed as discrimination. Just like when people start saying happy holidays, they're not even telling anybody to say happy holidays. When people start just saying happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas, all of a sudden, you know, we're burning Christians at the stake.
Right. It's count and that's it.
Yeah, essentially, they're just blind to their elevated position. So when people are trying to do whatever they can to make things better, you know, they can't handle it. And part of it is, too, that, you know, the systemic issues we have in this country, there aren't good, easy fixes to them. You know, so like oftentimes, there are solutions people propose that, yeah, they're not perfect solutions. Like if there was an easy, perfect solution, we would have just done it by now. If there's an easy, perfect solution that made everybody happy and like somehow made everything equal and we're all great, we would have just done it. But there is no perfect solution to deep systemic issues. All you can try to do is with a series of policies or a series of changes in attitude, do your best to, you know, work toward making a better world, but it's not something you can solve easily. And they want to chip away any proposed solution you have or I have or whoever has, they want to chip away at it at whatever cost to keep the status quo. And which is why I think this term status quo warrior is the best term for them. It really is what they want to do.
Yeah, and I think you really hit the nail on the head when you said that they don't see their privilege except when they see everybody else starting to get the same sort of rights, and then they think mm-hmm. that that's an attack on them. Because, like, I saw someone on Facebook, and he's like, well, explain, what is this white privilege, you know? And people are there trying to explain it, and he's like, lols, okay, whatever, you know, just completely ignorant and still denying it, even though people are there trying to explain it to him. And then he's the same one that later was like, if I subscribe to Sargon of Akkad, does that make me a bad person? And everybody's like, yeah. And then, and then eventually, you know, he kept going on with this stupid rhetoric, and he's like, screw these SJWs and everything. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know you anyway, so be gone. But I mean, I keep seeing this same sort of trollish, toxic attitude everywhere, and it's being brought to light with this whole debacle that went on. And it's I don't know, in some ways it's helping because it's showing us these huge failings that we've got in our society, and you know how morally bankrupt some people are and how much work we still have to do. But then at the same time, it's like giving stupid people more ammunition to, I don't know, expand their ignorance, their willful ignorance, and their just disregard for humanity.
Molly, I have to disagree with you on one thing. And that is saying that this is stupidity. And I don't believe it is. I believe it is intellectual laziness. It is much easier to think that everything is everybody else's fault. You're really the victim because of who these other people are. Because when you frame it that way, you don't have to see anybody else as human. And that's what leads you to be able to say things that, like, feminism is a mental illness because it always seems like they're coming after me. That can't possibly be because of the shitty things I'm saying. It just must be their problem. So if you're faultless, if you have no responsibility whatsoever, and, you know, you're just attacked for everything and nothing's your fault, of course you're going to, you know, take that option because it's easy. It's much easier to blame everybody else, take no responsibility and feel like everybody else is full of shit and, you know, all of that than it is to actually confront an issue. Because like you said, Thomas, there are no solutions. It's just bully people or harass them into silence. And that is not debate. It's bullying.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's another component, which I think is very closely related to what you just said, which is it's almost maybe an inevitability that it's the path of least resistance for people of privilege. So which is easier, which is more comfortable, to recognize the horrific history of people of color in this country and the systemic issues they face and the over-policing and the destruction of their communities, the poverty, all that, which is easier to recognize that and to think, wow, I've had my people of my group have had a part in this and it has benefited me. Like I have benefited from this white supremacy in our society over the years. Which is easier, to recognize that or to think, well, we've got a lot of nice laws that were supposed to fix all that, you know, and we can just pretend that that was fixed and now everything everybody does is their own choice. And so anybody's success or anybody's failings is on them. Like that's such a intellectually comfortable and easier on your conscience thing to think, you know, if they can find some way to try to find one cherry picked stat that will tell them that, oh no, black and white people, same interactions with the cops, it's actually not due to race at all. If they can find one thing, then they don't have to deal with the just moral weight of what's actually happening, you know, because what's actually happening is oftentimes horrifying.
Yeah. You're right. And you know, I can only imagine what it is that you're dealing with in this fallout. And, you know, I feel for you. I really do. And you know, a lot of the interviews I've done on my primary show recently have either been connected to this event or at least have regarded it in some way. I've talked to Stephanie Zvan, Karen Garst, Alex Jules, Christy Winters, Hemet Mehta, and I've gotten a lot of different perspectives on this. And I can't help but feel for what you're dealing with. But the biggest thing I have to argue against, and I don't think this is something you're perpetuating, is that this is fringe or that this is outlier or that this is just, you know, a small fraction. Because when you look at the numbers and the popularity and, you know, statistics don't lie. This is not something that is just like a few people in the corner. This is a very big percentage of the movement, right?
I absolutely agree. I think I wish we had better information or data on just what kind of a problem it is, you know, because I can imagine there's going to be a range. There's going to be, yes, out and out shitlord, racist, transphobic, bigoted people, of course. There's also going to be people who are playing into the bullshit apologetics about those people. People who are perpetuating the problem, who wouldn't say the horrible things themselves, likely. I mean, they likely wouldn't harass somebody, but they are willing to overlook it. They are willing to say, it's just not a big deal, whatever, words.
Or it's free speech.
Words? yeah, exactly. And there's probably then, as well, I would say, there's likely a silent majority of people who just kind of don't care enough. And that's wrong too. I think they should care more, but they just, you know, they're atheists. They want to see Richard Dawkins speak or something. They don't really care about all this social justice stuff. So I'm guessing there's a big spectrum. I don't know how to fit the numbers in there, but I would agree with you. My intuition, and PZ Meyer said on my show, like, oh, it's probably only 10%. I thought, I just don't think that could possibly be true. You know, like when Sam Harris is, again, I'm not calling Sam Harris a shitlord by any means. He's not like that level of awful, but he has some very problematic views. He says really ill-informed things about Black Lives Matter, and his audience loves it. He's got a huge audience, a massive audience. His podcast is enormous, you know, many times bigger what mine or what Scathing is, you know, like, so I can't imagine that that's not a large segment of our community. You know, I think when you hold a plain old vanilla atheist convention, you probably have a lot of these people there. Now, they're not coalescing around a Kekistani flag because most of the time we don't platform one of their shitlords, fortunately, and we should never do that again. But yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely. I think that it's a large number of people. If I had to guess, I would say the number of people who are actively against this stuff must be in the minority. They must be in the minority, just based on the audiences I described. You know, it doesn't mean that the majority is shitlords. I want to be very careful. I'm not saying the majority is actively, you know, troll online abusers, but I think it's significant, and I think their apologists are very significant. The people who just don't care or are kind of amused by it, I think that's very significant.
Well, and another problem is those that are the followers of Sargon and the like are very vocal. Mm-hmm. And so even if they are the minority, I mean, they are a very loud minority. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, the squeaky wheel, you know? So they make themselves
motivated.
Known,
yeah, they are just motivated. Absolutely. Sorry to interrupt you, but
go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to agree because you're right. They're motivated. I'm seeing it now. They are organized around their virtues, which are pissing people off and trolling. You're right. I mean, that is one reason, I guess, I think maybe why PZ thinks it could only be a small percentage is they're so motivated and organized that maybe that makes them look bigger than they are. But I would again go back to what I said about kind of the spectrum. You know, I think maybe if the out and out shitlords are only a small percentage, and they might only be I wouldn't say small, but a fraction, then not a majority or anything. The people who enable them, I think, it ends up being maybe a majority. Like it could be 60%. I don't know. You know, when all told. But what do you think, Chris?
I have a hard time believing that these numbers are small. I was listening to the PZ Meyer's interview, and you know, I'm not too familiar with his work, and I really like that interview. But that was the part where I took some exception, simply because a lot of the people who are saying things like that don't exist in the world that I do, where you can be bullied mercilessly for existing, where, you know, where people come out and say, like feminism, that it's a mental illness that I'm transgender, or that, you know, I shouldn't have rights, or they're in favor of bathroom bills. I mean, a lot of the conservative platforms against us, they tend to take. So it's an uphill battle in what is already an uphill battle. And people who argue against things like privilege have never had to come at it from a point of view like this. And it's very, granted, it is very hard to have the level of empathy to know what it's like. But at the same time, you know, it's not like we're approaching the world of silencing everybody else for our own agenda. Most of us just want to survive. Most of us just want to get through the day without being called the wrong thing or thrown out of our own homes for existing openly or be discriminated against when it comes to medical care or employment. I mean, what a lot of these arguments against SJWs and all the pejoratives that they come up with seem to be is that these people want to exist as humans, and a bunch of white people who think that everybody is equal just goes, No, you're probably just making that up. It's lazy.
Yep.
And what really drove home the lack of empathy to me was when he told you that I do this because it upsets you. Like, that not only says to me that it's a bad idea, it says to me that I have nothing else to stand on. It seems to be I'm firing up a lot of people who have a lot of power and want to keep that power for themselves so that I don't have to learn anything or I don't have to acknowledge someone else's struggle, because of course emotion makes you weak, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said it a bit ago, and I can't believe I let it go. I meant to comment on it. You said that, I mean, you were having like sympathy and empathy for me right now. And I just thought like, gosh, what an odd thing, because I can't imagine that you aren't receiving more abuse just for existing, you know, than I mean, volume wise, because I've gotten a big spotlight on me now, like maybe I'm getting a lot of stuff, but like in terms of how, I guess, fundamentally awful it is. I mean, I feel a little guilty for you having said that, you know, that you're sympathizing with where I am or feeling bad for me right now, because like you had to be in a movement where Sam Harris has Jordan B. freaking, I forget if Peterson. It was a clean show or not.
Yeah. No,
Jordan B. fucking Peterson on his show to say, how about these, you know, uppity trans people that are identifying as 15 digit numbers, you know, cause they're such fakers, and they're, you know, like he platformed that guy and said, well, of course I agree with all that. Now let's get to the stuff that, you know, we might disagree on. I can't imagine what that must be like for you. That, I mean, that's what makes me so sick about this. And that's what, one of the things that has really motivated me of late is just like the laziness involved in that, you know, like, cause I honestly think it's mostly laziness and inconsiderate. I don't know what the word would be, inconsideration. I don't know of for Sam Harris specifically when it comes to that. Like, I just think he hasn't bothered and he hasn't cared enough about trans people to say, okay, this person, Jordan B. Peterson, is making a really explosive statement. This is important enough to me to look into. He didn't even bother to speak to a lawyer, to talk to a Canadian lawyer or something and say, hey, is what this guy is spewing about Bill C-16 that's supposedly the end of the world, is that accurate at all? He didn't even care enough to do that. You know, and I think that's the most telling thing of it. I think that does come from privilege.
Well,
it does come. Go ahead.
He, like a lot of other white male atheists, like when Trump got elected, threw us under the bus. Because when Trump was elected, and, you know, you have my first book, you know what I was thinking during that time. It was, holy shit, we're going to be the first that they go after. And surprisingly, I was right about that. But what I didn't expect were people like Bill Maher, Sam Harris, and people who, like, ideologically are supposedly on our side to be the first to throw us under the bus. I mean, when Bill Maher had Milo on his show, I was hoping he was going to eviscerate him. And instead, we have him, you know, misgendering someone, calling them mentally ill, saying horribly, horrible things. And Bill Maher's just going, hey, you're a young hitch, buddy. You're funny. And it's just like, fuck you. And then, of course, Larry Wilmore lost the argument because he told him to go fuck himself after Milo insulted his intelligence. So,
okay.
It's not only gatekeeping. It's a matter of putting themselves in one position and us in an impossible standard to live up to. And where I feel that the most sympathy I have for you outside of the bullying that you're getting right now is that you were set up to fail. There is absolutely no way you were not set up to fail. There was no crowd control. There was no moderator. There was no format given to you. And you were speaking to a guy who has had supporters show up and pack the front rows before. I mean, not specifically for him, but like with feminist speakers. So to me, you walked into a situation where, you know, the other team already had the ball on the 1 yard line. Like it just wasn't optimal for you. And I think people knew that and did it anyway. You know,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, you talk about what I deal with, but what I deal with does not make me have less empathy for you now that you're the target, now that you're receiving this, because I think if nothing else, if a trans person you've never met comes to you and says, I'm being bullied by shitlords, you're going to know exactly what that's like on some level.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I would hope that more people would have empathy for that. You know, I meant to, sorry, I got so many thoughts in my head at once. First thing I want to say is it went back to, gosh, I can't remember, something you said a moment ago, but you reminded me that one person's comment to me about this was about Jess Phillips, you know, the MP that the tweet was about, was, well, and he just said this, this person on Twitter just said this, you know, just kind of haphazardly, just like offhandedly. Well, she was farming for rape threats that night. Farming for rape threats. And that was not even, that wasn't even the thrust of what he was saying. I think that was the first, that was like the dependent clause. And then he went on to say some other thing, you know, that was like, well, we all know, you know, she was farming for rape threats. So, you know, he went on. I was like, well, that is what you casually can assert. Like, she is farming for rape threats. And that's what they believe. They believe that anyone who says they're getting abused or trolled online is just faking it. And then they use that information to then troll and abuse people online. It's sickening.
Right.
The other thing I need to say is thank you so much for reminding me about Larry Wilmore. I forgot about that. He is one of my favorite people. I want to, after this, just to feel better, I'm going to go watch that clip again because he is so friggin' great. I love that that was his response. And you're right. People took that to be like, oh, he just disqualified himself right there. It's like, no, sometimes the proper reaction is, you know what, go fuck yourself. Sometimes it is. Not all the time, you know. But like some, when people are fundamentally saying just horrible stuff and are just getting away with it, like, no, you don't have to be polite, you know. I very much don't believe in ever threatening any sort of sexual violence toward anyone, and none of my insults will ever involve rape or sexual trauma or even violence. I you know, to the best of my, you know, and if I slip up, I will immediately apologize for that, because that's not okay. But to call someone, hey, you're being a fucking moron, you know, that's not harassment. That is my opinion of what you're doing right now. When you are apologizing for people cheering sexual harassment, sorry, you're being a fucking asshole. You know, like I'm not going to tiptoe around that. So I know that's a bit of a scatterbrained series of thoughts there, but there's just some things you reminded me of.
Well, I'm certainly not going to, you know, say that we don't have a lot to talk about. We could probably make this like three episodes if we had the time. I've listened to all of this like as it comes out, because it matters to me so much, because I feel like you and a lot of other people got a real vision of what some of us deal with every day. And once again, I'm not holding that against you. I'm not saying that you're privileged and therefore, you know, you were ignorant of whatever. That's not what I'm saying. But when these ideas get platformed for people who may have been less aware of them or may have been unaware that we deal with them all the time, I think that's a limelight that a lot of people weren't looking into when we were saying Sam Harris is blaming Trump on us, or Bill Maher says we're a boutique issue, or any of the other people who have come forward to say that, you know, we're the first to go. We need to, anytime someone posts about a bathroom bill or being banned from the military, the same shitty arguments get recycled every 6 weeks, and we have to log into social media. And even if we aren't personally being attacked, someone's got their shitty opinion about trans people right there. And don't even get me started on the comment sections, because there have just been times, especially during the military ban, where I've had to log out of Facebook for like 5 days. So yeah. I think these ideas are getting opened up to a lot more of the community who didn't consider them now, or thought we might have been being dramatic, or, you know, the idea of making it up, because, you know, getting harassed and, you know, rape threats is so much fun, right? You know, I can't wait to go to the next convention and just farm for rape threats because it's just, it gives me so much joy.
Well, yeah, I mean, you make a ton of money on that, right?
Yeah, for deplatforming white men, that's what I get out of it. I want them to threaten me so that I can deplatform them. That's my major goal in life, is to make sure that people threaten me.
Yeah. You farm for rape threats, and then I think you can sell them to an NPC for a lot of gold. So,
see, I just keep picturing, sorry, Riz, it's a World of Warcraft reference, but there was, and one of the last expansions before I quit playing, they, like, you had your own little farm plot, so I'm like, what, do they get rape threat seeds, and they plant them, and then you have to water them, and... What, it takes, 3 days for them to mature and then you harvest, or what? I mean,
isn't this just a roundabout way of saying they're asking for it?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, well.
And they make sure. And the most disgusting thing, maybe the most disgusting thing these people do, this could take the cake, is they are of the attitude that women often fake their rape accusations. And so their solution to that is to fake rape accusations.
Yeah.
They will put out fake accusations against people like PZ Myers. I'm sure they'll do it to me if they haven't already. They'll do it in order to drive their point home that people fake rape accusations. So their solution to what they view as a problem of, victims aren't always reliable, is to muddy the waters further and make it even worse for anyone who's a victim of rape or sexual assault to try to come forward.
Yeah.
I mean, it's disgusting.
Cogdis got it too, if you didn't see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did see that. That's exactly what, totally.
And that was for only letting people know that there's an anonymous email you can come forward to in case it happened to you. Because once again, what we really want is the doxing and the exile and the, endless barrage of bullying and hero worship that comes out of, letting someone know that they've been sexually harassed by a powerful white man.
Oh, yeah. And with the political climate too, with the freaking horrible monstrosity in the White House and his track record, and then the Me Too campaign going across Facebook has really brought forward the trolls, where they're like, oh, I just see everybody and they're just jumping on the victim bandwagon, and I'm,
yep,
oh my gosh, like, the,
because you get, again, because it's such a reward.
Mm-hmm.
It's whatever, it's unbelievable.
I don't know if either one of you saw this, but I made a post about it where I went into detail about what happened to me. And then at the end of it, I was like, is that specific enough for you so you don't think I'm fucking making it up? Like, I think what the problem of that was, I mean, I love that it got a conversation started, especially because of the timing and being connected to this and people, platforming sexual harassment and thinking that it's free speech and a good thing. First of all, the hashtag was co-opted by people who thought that financial abuse and sexual neglect was the real problem, because, sometimes men put, nice coins into a woman and sex doesn't fall out, so they're really the victims. But also that we must be making it up. That
I need to get some of these nice coins.
Yeah. Right? Like, and not everybody who used that hashtag was saying that they were raped. Sometimes it's just uncomfortable harassment. But the point is, an awful lot of women during that time were coming forward and saying, yeah, this has happened to me too. Here's my story. And a lot of men, and a lot of good men that I respect, were saying, it is surprising to me how many people I'm saying posting this. Never mind the people who are like, they're probably just all making it up. Fuck them. I'm not talking about them.
Yeah.
But I was in the position, and I was explaining this to a friend who has nothing to do with any of this, and realizing just how absurd it can get. It was like, I sometimes wish I could be in the position that it could be a surprise to me.
Yeah.
I wish I could, you know, go through every day and not realize how many people I know who have dealt with this and how many people I know who are hurting and not being believed. And it's just, I wish sometimes that I didn't have to know that. And for
And that goes back to, absolutely, that goes back to the, what's the more comfortable thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the more comforting thought that, you know, there is this horrendous, rampant problem with sexual harassment and abuse and assault, or that some people are making it up? Oh, it's so much easier to think some people are making it up. That sounds nice. I'll go with that one.
Yeah, they don't have to do anything.
And it goes back to the male privilege. This one is very specifically male privilege. Now, yes, before anyone goes off on me, yes, men can be the victims and are, have been the victims of sexual harassment and assault, of course. But they're vastly outnumbered by the women who have, and it's fundamentally different when someone physically larger than you, it does something threatening toward you, you know, it's just different. And it's, I think the saddest thing about it is if your reaction to seeing just story after story on the Me Too hashtag, story after story of women, you know, Jeff, forget our movement for a sec. This was a, you know, this was a mainstream thing. Me Too was, you know, this wasn't some obscure like atheist movement hashtag. This was a mainstream thing that went viral everywhere. And a lot of just everyday normal people, like run of the mill, you know, just not involved in atheism is what I mean to say. Like just everyday people in this country, witnessed countless women coming forward with their stories. And for some people's reaction to be anything other than fuck, like what the hell, you know, like, oh my God, this is awful. I don't get it. You know, I don't get how that could not be your reaction. And you know, this is one area where I think men need to make an effort to listen, because it's true. It's not a race thing. I mean, this is very much cross cultural, cross everything. This is, I think, mainly a man problem. If you're just a dude and you walk down the street and you go about your everyday life, you really don't see this. You know, you really are blinded by your situation oftentimes, unless, you know, it happens to someone very close to you, or, you know, it takes effort to open your horizons and to listen and to realize this is a gigantic problem, you know, and you have to go out there. But it's one thing if you're ignorant because you just haven't taken that step yet. In which case, by the way, that's why I think this hashtag was a good thing. I mean, it's for everyone, I suppose, to decide for themselves. But I think this hashtag and the sharing was a good thing. I think it's a painful thing that women had to share, you know, and it sucks that that's what it has to take, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think, you know, in my humble opinion, that it is a great thing if more people are aware of just how rampant this is, you know, because I think there are likely a lot of people who are just blissfully unaware of this, but through no malice of their own, they just were ignorant. You know, people are ignorant of all kinds of things. They were ignorant of this, and I bet you this opened their eyes. You know, hopefully there's hopefully there are a lot of examples of people whose eyes were open. And that's what I hope is the truth. But that's one thing, you know, to be ignorant through no fault of your own, unaware, and then to see this and go, holy shit, what's going on? That's one thing. To try to shut it down, to try to play it off as fake, as people making up stories. I mean, that's a whole nother story. That's disgusting. I don't understand how that could be someone's impulse.
Well, you've seen a lot of it yourself and on Cogdis's page for having the nerve to mention that there's a secret network. And I've said it on your page. I probably said it on your voicemail, and I said it on their page too. If the idea that women are talking about people who behave inappropriately bothers you, maybe that's because you're afraid that they'll talk about how you've been behaving.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's got to be it. I mean, they're afraid that there's going to be some new world order where if they try to talk to a woman, they'll be arrested for rape or something. And that's on the benefit of the doubt spectrum. I think what you're saying is also true, that there are probably plenty of men who are threatened by this because they have engaged in shitty behavior and want to continue to do so.
Yeah. Sorry, Molly, I've been kind of dominating this conversation.
Yeah, apologies.
That's okay.
Well.
My husband looked over a couple times and gave me this confused look like, I thought you were recording, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm just, yeah, he's nodding.
I've been talking about this for 6 weeks, and outside of the message I sent to Thomas, this is the first time I've gotten to talk about it with him, so I got a little excited.
Oh, yeah, by all means. I mean...
Well, give us your views on the hashtag and what you thought about all that, if you don't mind.
Well, I mean, I posted too, you know? Yeah. I mean, I had my own personal... stuff. I don't want to give all the details of of it, but I mean, at the same time, like, I work in a male dominated profession. You know, I was in the military. I still work for the federal government. I, you know, carry a gun. I am the only female in my department. And I mean, they don't see it, but like, you know, when I come into work and I'm feeling like crap, so I'm wearing my glasses instead of my contacts. And one of the guys is like, I don't like your glasses. They make you look old. And stuff like how I can't be sitting there and be in a bad mood without, you know, all kinds of people telling me to smile.
Just
stupid crap like that. And they don't see.
Yeah.
They don't see it. They don't see it. And I mean, it just annoys the piss out of me. And one of the things that I found really interesting was I've got a friend that I met through my writing, and, you know, he's an older gentleman. He's gay. He's got his, you know, his life partner and everything. And he posted when the Me Too came up, he's like, you know, I've been harassed too, but then I also realized through this that some of my actions may have been inappropriate, and I may have thought it was okay because I am gay, so when I call people sweetie all the time or something like that.
Right.
And so, like, he wrote this very, I mean, this really nice... self-observation and apology and, you know, a conscious, wow, I didn't realize it and I need to be more aware of my actions. And then I also saw a woman who's like, well, I don't see the point. Nobody's going to change. And I just want to beat my face against the wall or a rock or something, because I'm like, no, I have seen proof right here in my friends that other people can change once they realize some of this stuff. And I mean, yeah, if there's some serial harassers and, you know, Trumps out there that all act that way and think they're whatever, yeah, maybe those guys won't change. But the honest to goodness, like, down to earth, decent people, if it's brought to light, I mean, they can.
Mm-hmm. I've got a short story for you that I think might help add the perspective that I have to this. And I would highly recommend anybody who wants to hear beyond Me Too to hear just how big of a problem this actually is, especially for young people on a campus. There's a book called We Believe You, Survivors of Campus Sexual Assault Speak Out. And it is nothing but stories of sexual assault, some to cis women, some to trans women, some to men. You know, it covers everything. And I was reading this book, and I recognized something. I don't remember what it was, but I was reading a story. I realized it was written by a trans woman, and it took place in Philadelphia. And I was like, I went to school in Philadelphia. And then I said it was between 2013 and 2014. Well, that was my first year in college in Philadelphia. I got to the end, and not only was it someone I knew, it was someone I went to the same community college with. And she had transitioned before she knew about me. So I wasn't able to say, hey, person, I know you because, you know, my name's different now. But, you know, I read that and it's like, shit, we went to the same community college and ended up in the same major city for 4 years. And she wrote this piece. It's really short, but I feel this is important to add to the conversation. It's called The Dangerous Myth of the Ideal Survivor. Institutions of higher education often re-traumatize students who survive gender-based violence by invalidating our stories and denying our experiences. While survivors on campuses all over the country are rising to claim justice, in the sea of people clamoring for change, there's a media focus on the particular ideal type of survivor, a cis, white, or white passing, heterosexual woman. The patriarchy also delivers the message that innocent people who get raped are worthy of dignity, but other people deserving of rape are deserving of rape or cannot be raped. Many people believe these lies. Many more continue to believe that the only legitimate form of rape is that perpetuated by a stranger. However, survivors are not all ideal. Typically, people who were date raped, trans women, and women of color fall into the category of other. And many of us don't get our stories heard because we don't get the space or attention to tell those stories. Not every survivor in the campus anti-violence movement was raped. Some were stalked or were physically, verbally, or emotionally abused in relationships or were sexually harassed at school, at work, on the street, or had other horrifying experiences. Our movement is diverse because the people in it are diverse and their experiences of abuse are diverse. While the movement has been led by enterprising and intelligent people across the spectrum of race, sexuality, and gender, classic activism in the form of rallies and teach-ins isn't enough to make universities change. The media is the most powerful weapon, with its power to shape our stories with the world, the power to share our stories with the world and threaten the university's brand. Unfortunately, the media also helps shape the problematic image of the ideal survivor. Sometimes when reporters ask for survivor stories, they reject stories from us in the QTPOC, queer and trans person of color community, upon hearing who and what we are. And sometimes queer and financially suffering survivors within the movement have felt betrayed by other survivors when the other survivors focus their organizations to cater to those with privilege. If the movement to fight gender-based violence on college campuses is to succeed, it requires the voices of all survivors. So when members of the media or members of the movement ignore survivors of color and queer survivors, call them out on it. Someone who perpetuates myths and erasure isn't an ally. Many of us who join the campus anti-violence movement because we experience the pain of institutional betrayal. When our university ignores or punishes us after we report gender-based violence or harassment, our movement and community should not betray us as well. And I feel like if you just changed out college for pretty much anything else we're talking about here, we wouldn't change a word.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That's someone you just happen to know that happened to go to the same schools.
Yeah. We were both at the same community college. We transferred the same semester. She went to Temple. I went to Penn. And this happened what was essentially both of our freshman years at these schools. And I just happened to be reading this book and I got to the end and saw the name and I was like, oh shit, I know this person. So whenever someone says that this is a, you know, small problem or that it doesn't happen a lot or that people are making it up, realize that I picked up a random book and not only found someone I knew, but found someone that close. This is a huge problem and the magnitude of it is just only beginning to be visible.
Yeah, well said. Well said.
Or as some people that you've been dealing with would say, the real victims are white men because sometimes they get told that they shouldn't be talking about certain things.
Yeah.
And that's clearly the same thing as shaming. Like I love that one caller who was like, white men get shamed at college, and having just come out of college, it's like, no, but you know, let's just say they asked for your pronouns on the first day. If you've never had to deal with that before, it feels like you're being shamed for not being different, but really it's just to make sure that we don't get called the wrong thing. That's not shame if it's just to make other people feel comfortable too. So
yeah, and yes, absolutely. I do think, you know, I've certainly seen instances, and I've done it myself, of speaking in a way about white men that, you know, is highlighting that white men are privileged and are somewhat blind to their privilege. And I, you know, you could call that shaming. But it, I think it's also true and appropriate. And it's, in my opinion, I think it's necessary to try to shock people into realizing there's things they're not seeing, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, there might be some, what one could characterize as shaming of white men when their privilege blinds them to stuff. But the proper response to that is, well, shoot, what am I doing? Like, what is my behavior? What am I missing? What am I, you know? And it's not to disqualify an entire movement for justice because of what you think someone said that wasn't nice, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah, and as you found out, they expect you to be nice and respectful and calm and logical and never have any emotion, but they only expect us to do that. They can get as emotional as they want. They can say whatever they want. They can yell as much as they want. They can get as upset as they want. And they can use identity politics because it's their identity.
Right, yeah. So. Yeah, they switch on a dime between, oh man, identity politics is the worst. Anyway, how about all these identity politics? It's really is. I mean, it's hilarious in some ways. I mean, it really is. Like the when I asked the question at the debate of, like, you know, after all this stuff about identity politics and how bad it is, and I said, do you think white men are being discriminated against? Or maybe he asked me, I can't remember. And I was like, well, no, white men have it a lot easier. And it was the most comical reaction, booing, you know, just absolute disdain that I would say that. And their argument is that, yeah, white men have it really so tough. And here's why. And it's like, you know, identity politics is such a useless term. It's a really frustrating term in my opinion, and it's a useless term in my opinion, because I care about issues. I care about fixing, you know, doing our best to fix these systemic injustices. It doesn't mean that, like, if you're a marginalized identity that you are worth more or something. Like, it doesn't mean that. It means that there is such a thing as a marginalized identity. Right. That's all it means, you know? And, like, let's try to solve that.
Yeah. There's no currency that comes along with this, except sometimes we get to talk when other people have to shut up. Like, that's really the only privilege we have, is if we get asked to talk about trans things, which is, of course, the only thing we're ever invited to conventions to talk about, other people have to shut up for 45 minutes. Like, that's really it.
Yeah.
And I've said this before. Well, I look forward to the day where me or Callie or somebody, first of all, that there's more than one trans person invited to speak. And second of all, that we can talk about things that aren't the trans things. I would love to be able to talk about anything else.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'm a bit out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, yeah, that's okay. My wife's about to come home, barge in. But so, yeah, I don't want to exit abruptly. We can definitely, you know, if you want to do closing thoughts or anything, let me know.
Yeah. Well, I know we had some other topics we had mentioned about chatting about, so we'll just have to have you back on sometime.
My pleasure. Yeah.
So thank you so much for coming on the show. And if people who have not heard your show shows want to find your stuff, where did they go?
Oh, sure. Just search Serious Inquiries Only in any Google or podcasts or anything. SeriousPod.com is my website. So check it out. Thanks for the plug, and thanks for the chance to speak to you guys. It was really fun.
And
yeah,
I just want to say with my own voice one more time, thank you for what you did, because the easier thing to do would have been to not do it. And, you know, I said this in the message to you, as bad as it was, he tried to say he was a nice guy to you. Imagine what it would have been like if me or Molly or Callie or somebody was up there, and just imagine the shit they would have yelled at us. So thank you for what you did, and thank you for what you've said since. I'm truly sorry for what you're dealing with. You don't deserve it.
I really appreciate that. It means a lot, and thanks for everyone who's been helping support me. I mean, I'm, you know, I guess I won't go off, but yeah, it has sucked. But I, as I've said, you know, what really would have sucked more for me is having let people like you down, you know, and having to deal with your disappointment, you know, that would have been soul crushing to me to have to see a bunch of people say, wow, I can't believe he didn't defend us. I can't believe he didn't stand up for us. You know, that would have been far worse. So thank you so much for saying so.
Of course. Anytime.
All right, so that wraps up our show for tonight, and so we will talk to everybody next week. Thanks. Good night.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for joining us. If you like what you hear, please consider supporting the show on Patreon at patreon.com/doubtingdogma or leave a review on iTunes. You can follow the show on Facebook at facebook.com/doubtingdogma or on Twitter at Doubting Dogma. The intro music was written and performed by Marissa Alexa McCool and was used with her permission.